brisk start to early voting as VP nominee Kamala Harris visits Jacksonville. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, it's the final 2 weeks till Election Day. Have you voted yet? Do you have a plan to vote? What are your thoughts about the voting process? And the latest poll that we'll share on the state of the race in Florida. Give us a call now. It's 549-2937. Then later, we've got a preview of this month's Black Leadership Town Hall, the leading lights of the African-American community, taking the center stage. We'll tell you how you can be part of it. But first this hour, the latest on the pandemic around Florida and our area. Fletcher High School will now remain closed until at least next Wednesday, following a cluster of COVID-19 cases at that school. The Douglas Anderson School of the Arts is also closed this week due to some COVID cases there. Statewide, cases of the virus increased by 1,707. So there are a total now of 756,727 coronavirus cases across Florida and more than 15,000 deaths. Now, it's not surprising that the virus sparked heavy mail-in voting across the state. People have been sending in those mail-in ballots for a little bit now. But at the same time, Monday also saw a very brisk start to early voting around the region. More than 19,000 early votes had already been cast in Duval County by 3 o'clock Monday. That is on top of the more than 77,000 Duval County voters who sent in their ballot by mail. At the same time, Senator Kamala Harris, the Democratic nominee for vice president, came to town Monday, visiting a local early voting site on the northwest side and also the UNF campus. In a moment, too, we'll share poll results on the state of the race in Florida, courtesy of UNF. But first, WJCT News' Sky LeBron was at the Harris rally yesterday, and he's on the line now with more. Hi, Sky. Good morning.
Hey, Melissa. How's it going?
Good to have you on the show. So as Harris came to town, early voting was underway around town, and I think it will be remembered by all of us as the rally in the rain. It was a pretty wet affair on the UNF campus, but she did still get to make remarks to a drive-in crowd, and people were in their cars due to COVID-19 restrictions.
Yeah, it did cause a little bit of delays, but I would still say, based on being at the event and seeing everybody around, seeing people in their cars, there's a lot of excitement seeing her on stage and then seeing other Democratic leaders in North Florida sharing their piece as well, whether it be attacking the other side or whether they were also complimenting Senator Harris on her work that she's already done and the work that she plans to do, her campaigning. There was a lot of good vibes, I would say, from the crowd that was there from what could actually happen because, like we just said, everybody was in their cars. Rather than all the cheering that you might hear at a typical rally, you heard a lot of honking and things like that. It was interesting, and it was cut a bit short, it felt, because of the heavy, heavy rain. I know all of us got absolutely drenched because of all that rain that happened there.
It's 549-2937. Give us a call. Let us know who'll get your vote for president and your thoughts about voting in the final 2 weeks. Here is now Senator Kamala Harris speaking at UNF. Let's listen. Actually, we don't have that yet. We'll try to get it in a moment. We just lost Sky LeBron. We'll try to get him back too, but let's see if we can cue up Senator Harris's a snippet of her speech on the UNF campus.
So we are looking at a public health crisis, which I describe as being a crisis of proportion in terms of the loss of life like we have not seen since World War II. Over 215, we're approaching 220,000 human beings, their lives lost. So many who couldn't even be, because of the nature of the virus, with their families in their last days.
So that's Senator Harris talking about the COVID pandemic. And at the same time, rally goers who came out to see her speak had a lot to say about it as well, because it was a very different affair from the rallies President Trump has held in this area, where you saw thousands of people packed in together in a tight space without any masks or social distancing for the most part. The Harris rally had a limit on the number of people who could attend. Everybody was mostly confined to their cars and agreed to wear a mask and to distance if they left their vehicles. Here is Linda Weiner of Jacksonville, a Harris supporter. She was at the rally yesterday, expressed her support for a ticket she says is doing the right thing in supporting science and public health. But at the same time, she expressed a lot of anger at the state of affairs in the first place. Here's Linda Weiner.
I'm a Jacksonville, Florida resident. I have high risk for COVID. I don't go to the food store anyplace. I'm here because Biden and Harris care about people. And they made this. Everyone has to wear a mask. We're all socially distanced. And I'm outraged because when I came into this event, our Secret Service and our FBI agents, none of them had masks on. They were going in all of our cars, three at a time, with their dogs. None of them wore a mask. And when I asked them to put a mask on, one of them said to me, I'm an American. I can do whatever I want.
So you hear the anger in her voice, and certainly the divisions in this country have been apparent when you see how politicized mask wearing has become. We've seen it in the rallies that the presidential and vice presidential candidates are holding right here in Jacksonville, the difference in approach. And it really is unfortunate that this has become so politicized, because public health science shouldn't be political. The public health message is clear, and it's bipartisan, because the virus does not discriminate. It affects everyone. The virus doesn't care what your political affiliation is. If you don't take precautions, you're raising your risk of getting sick. Wearing masks, socially distancing, and frequent hand washing are the best defense tools that we have to limit the spread of coronavirus. Those are simply the facts. They're not in dispute. And it's just something that we, as a media organization, are committed to continuing to report. Now, as we work to get Sky LeBron back with us to share more of his coverage of the rally, let's talk about early voting for a minute. 96,717 ballots in Duval County have already been cast. That means more than 14% of registered Duval County voters have already voted. Early voting saw a brisk turnout Monday. You have 2 weeks to early vote before Election Day, Tuesday, November 3rd. Yesterday on this program, Duval County Supervisor of Elections Mike Hogan encouraged people to early vote. He said he'd like to see as many people as possible vote early. Keep in mind, in Florida, the clock starts the minute the ballots come in. In Florida, we do not wait until election night to count the vote-by-mail ballots and the early vote ballots. They start counting the second the ballots start coming in. That means there's a chance we might know who won Florida on election night, although it could be a long night, because here's some more data for you. A new poll of likely Florida voters conducted by the Public Opinion Research Lab at the University of North Florida shows a neck-and-neck race in the Sunshine State. Joe Biden has a razor-thin lead over President Trump. 1 point. When voters around Florida were asked who they would vote for if the election were held today, 48% said Joe Biden, 47% said Donald Trump. Now, here's some more information. 43% of Florida voters say they would vote by mail. 29% want to vote early in person. And 26% say they will vote on Election Day. 25% of Florida voters have already voted. So Sky LeBron back with us. By the way, Sky is in transit on to cover a story in St. Augustine, so he's calling in from the road for us. Sky, it's interesting that as we covered the rally of Senator Harris at UNF yesterday, also from the UNF campus, this new poll showing, no surprise, that Florida is a dead heat when it comes to the presidential race. Vice President Mike Pence is coming to Jacksonville this weekend. We'll have another rally to cover.
Yeah, and I think one of the most interesting results that came from that poll was that very few people find themselves in the middle. The poll says that 82% of the respondents either have very strong approval or very strong disapproval of the president's current actions. And I think that says two things, how polarizing this country really is right now, and Florida really is, and also the importance of Florida and the reason that we're seeing so many rallies right now. We saw Eric Trump come a couple weeks ago. We saw, of course, Donald Trump here a couple weeks ago as well in late September. And then we're seeing Kamala Harris stop by yesterday. And then it seems like Jacksonville, for some people's eyes, is that focal point in Florida, that if you can take Jacksonville, you have a good shot at winning Florida on either side.
That's right. And as we look at the feedback on social media to our coverage yesterday, it reflects the polarization in this community and in this country. Some people are tweeting saying, I already voted for Kamala Harris and Joe Biden. Others saying, I can't believe she came to town. Why couldn't the mayor keep her out? that gives you an idea of how strong the passions are around this election, Sky.
Yeah. And I think there's a big moment for me to realize how social media has really shifted the way that we're going to view these elections, I think, from now on. Of course, we've already seen it in past elections, but it's just getting more and more enhanced. And it was after that first presidential debate between Joe Biden and Donald Trump, just the amount of, you didn't have to ask anybody if they watched the debate, which in previous years, especially in my age group, the early 20s, you'll have to ask your friends, you know, did you watch this debate or not? And what did you think? You didn't have to ask this time. Everybody saw the debate and everybody had an opinion. If you didn't see it on TV, then you sure as heck saw it through social media. You saw the highlights. You saw the ups and downs and the back and forth. And I think this is just showing, one, that people are getting more politically involved at all age groups. And also, people are just really in tune to what's going on with this election, and it's very divisive. We're seeing it, in all news platforms, how you get comments from both sides. But it is something to say that everybody is invested in the outcome of this.
Let us know your thoughts, everyone. It's 549-2937. No matter your age or background, give us a call. You know, and the data coming in so far, Sky, shows that a lot of younger voters have already cast early ballots. That has surprised people that track this stuff. They expected the heavy senior vote to dominate. But younger voters are showing their voice at the ballot box this season, this election cycle. And you mentioned debates. There's one more debate coming up Thursday night between President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden. So there will be one more opportunity for voters to assess these two candidates, happening as the voting is progressing.
And you know, the interesting thing about that is, because of early voting, we're seeing such a high spike in the amount of people that are early voting. Who is still going to be undecided at that point? Which voters are you going to be trying to sway? Which bases are they really going to try to appeal to in that last debate? Because we're seeing so much early voting now, and there's still a little bit of time before that next debate. It's just going to be interesting to see how they choose to attack those specific topics that are going to be addressed, and also just the debate itself with them cutting off mics, and how are both candidates going to be able to use that to their advantage, or it'll work to their disadvantage. I think that's going to be an interesting element and tweak to the debate format that we didn't see in the previous debate, both presidential and vice presidential.
Yeah, and what about the fact that we're hearing this morning from the Commission on Presidential Debates that they will mute Trump or Biden if they interrupt and go over their allotted time? They will get the mute button.
Yeah, and I think something that we saw from Trump a little bit earlier from the previous debate that was supposed to be held virtually before it was canceled and then it decided to do the two town halls was that he didn't like that idea. So are we going to see another potential cancellation or change in the format because of disagreements from the candidates on how this is going to work? There's just a bunch of unknowns, I think, right now for this next debate. And there's also just some unknowns on, like I said again, how people are going to be swayed by this debate.
Right. It's 549-2937 as we talk about the final stretch of the election season. Let's go back to early voting for a minute, Sky. It really is reminiscent of 2016. The interest in this election all over town, people lined up early Monday morning at their early voting site to cast a ballot. Nearly 100,000 ballots in Duval County alone have already been cast. And that's about 15% of the total registered voter database in this city. No reason to think there won't be more of that to come over the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, and something I wanted to bring up was, man, if I was a supervisor of elections right now, I would be so nervous because the stakes are incredibly high right now. Whatever you do, if there's any mistakes at the polls, if there's any lost ballots or ballots that should have gone one way and end up the other, just little mistakes that maybe would be overlooked in other elections or just not hit the national news cycle, these are all things that you have to really be concerned with and really zone in on. And address immediately, because these are incredibly stressful times and everything is so polarized now that we've seen multiple times Donald Trump will tweet out when certain things are, when there's been certain stories throughout the nation that polls or absentee ballots were lost or they showed up at a location they shouldn't have shown up at. So how are these supervisors of elections going to be able to handle the immense pressure that is the 2020 election, I think, is going to be interesting over the next couple of weeks.
That's right. We did speak Monday with the Duval County Supervisor of Elections, Mike Hogan. He encouraged as many people as possible to vote early. He pointed out that if you come out and vote early, that gives you more safeguards. What if you forget your identification or there's any other problem with your ballot? You can submit a provisional ballot, but with early voting, you have more time to rectify the ballot. They can reject your ballot if there isn't a perfect signature match. Then you have to submit what's called a cure affidavit form to make sure that your ballot is counted. And so early voting gives voters more time. You can also fill out a mail-in ballot and drop it off at an early voting location where drop boxes have been set up. You can do that if you don't want to wait in line. If you didn't get out and vote Monday, you have until October 31st, Halloween in Clay and St. John's counties, and you have through November 1st in Duval and Nassau counties. Then, of course, Election Day is Tuesday, November 3rd. It's 549-2937. Omar is downtown Jacksonville. Hi, Omar. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. So, yeah, I was in the line downtown of the Supervisor of Elections office yesterday at about 6:45, kind of with the first big group. And it was quite a long line. I mean, there was at least 100 people there, and it didn't stop. Took us about an hour and a half to get through the line. So, I mean, you know, it's a little frustrating, but I will say the overall feel, regardless of, you know, I guess, party is who you're voting for. Everyone was like talking, and people had music playing on the phones. It was a very energized kind of feeling. So, but the concern I had, so by the time I got from the back parking lot to the front of the building, the poll workers came out and said that, oh, sorry, we only had two polls open for that first whole hour, pretty much. Now, I vote there every election, generally, because I live a few blocks away. And they always generally have about four or five that I usually remember having open. So he came out and he said that, and kind of with no remorse, really. And then said, we opened up some more. And they had us in the hallways and kind of all over the place. And I think they said they opened up 8 different polls. But it was kind of really strange to think that as a supervisor of elections office on the first day of early voting, where you know you have countless people working downtown, people living downtown, you have the senior homes, and somehow you cut the polls you normally would have in half, and then, you know, somehow an hour later, now there's 8. So, I mean, the line moved very quickly after that, but it was just very kind of odd to, you know, that would be happening on the first day of early voting. Yeah, it was really strange. So I wanted to bring that up.
Thanks, Omar. Share your early voting experiences with us. It's 549-2937 as we talk about this early voting period. Rebecca in Arlington. Hi, Rebecca. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Melissa. I had a question about the logistics of voting. If I vote, but my address on my license is different than where I live now, will the vote still count if there's been a change and I didn't get a chance to change my driver's license yet?
I believe so, Rebecca, but what I would do is I would go in and vote early, as they suggest, just in case there's any issue, then you have time to rectify it. How's that?
Okay, because I actually just got home from voting, and I worried about that, but it's been so backed up.
If you submitted your ballot through the machine and it was accepted, then you should be fine. But what I would suggest is, if you have a concern, just call the Supervisor of Elections office and ask them to make sure.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Let's get a few more. Oh, actually, no, that person hung up, but while we wait for the next one to get queued, Sky LeBron, people just have so many questions about their ballots.
I know, and I'm dealing with the same thing as the previous caller as well. I have a different address as where I currently live right now. My address is in a completely different county in Florida. So it hasn't given me any issues so far. I would also suggest to continue to track your voter status on the Supervisor of Elections website. And then the thing that Omar brought up is such a real issue, I think, right now, and that is voter discouragement. When people, you hear these stories of people having to wait 6 hours, 11 hours, even 2 hours, and these are real acts of potential voter discouragement for some people. You know, you see on Twitter, I've seen it a lot, where people are tweeting out, I waited in line for 9 hours, and then we'll see some politicians say, oh, wow, congratulations to you, kudos to you for sticking it out that long. But the thing about it is for many others, that is a discouragement to head to the polls. It makes them a little bit weary of, oh, man, do I want to spend an entire day waiting to cast my ballot? Will it be even worth it? So that is definitely an issue. And then, of course, COVID-19 adds an entirely different element to it as well for potential voter discouragement. So it's a real issue, and we'll see if it plays a factor over the next couple weeks, or if with so much early voting, it is not going to play as much as a factor because there's so much time to get out and vote.
Thanks, Sky. A few more calls now. Let's go to Bunny in Atlantic Beach. Hi, Bunny.
Hey, is this Melissa?
Yeah, go ahead. If you could turn off speaker or turn off your radio, go ahead.
Okay, I'll do both. I was trying to find out whether my ballot had been received, and so I Googled the Duval County Supervisor of Elections, and when the site popped out, the very top of the site says, "Ad, vote for Donald Trump. Paid for by Donald J. Trump for presidential election. Republicans vote early. Find where to vote early." And I thought that was kind of strange.
Well, both campaigns, you will be seeing lots of digital ads like the one you saw, and lots of television and radio ads in these final 2 weeks, Bunny. That is just where we are with this. The campaigns are going to flood this market with ads.
But how could it be on the Duval County Supervisor of Elections site, Google site?
You mean you feel that should remain nonpartisan? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I would think so.
Yeah. Since I didn't see it, I can't comment, but I think your comment reflects the frustration a lot of voters feel with just the ubiquitousness of these ads and where they are popping up everywhere, including on a site like that one. So, Bunny, thank you for that. Thank you for letting us know that. Barry in Springfield. Hi, Barry.
Hey, Melissa. I just wanted to let some of these voters know that are standing in line. Don't get discouraged. Go down to the convention center, and you can get right in and out. Wife and I got in there and out in 10 minutes. Just no lines at all.
Yeah, Barry, good to hear that.
Well, yeah, it is, because we went to the Supervisors of Elections, and they were wrapped around the building. So
right.
I'm thankful we went down there. So
right.
Just wanted to let you know.
Thank you for that. One more call. It's Byron in Orange Park. Hi, Byron. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
So I was at the site yesterday in Orange Park at the library, and things went very smoothly, about 40 minutes, I think. But my question is, I noticed a lot of people wearing T-shirts supporting the candidate that they were for, I suppose. And I thought that that was against the rules. Am I mistaken, or is there a rule against wearing T-shirts or flying flags at the poll site inside of the polling place?
You're not supposed to do that, Byron, is my understanding. Although we have heard scattered reports of people violating that and also, you know, electioneering too close to a polling site. Sky LeBron, if you're still with us, you're off to another story, but we've got two more weeks to go.
Yeah, and we will see. I do think that that's going to be an interesting element to look at as well, is what kind of people are going to be around these polling locations and how could they potentially influence the election? Is there going to be any enforcement to step into that and make sure that voter intimidation is not something that's happening, or just too much campaigning outside of these polling locations? There's so many interesting elements to this 2020 election. I think this is going to be such a huge topic. I mean, one of the only topics that people really care about over the next couple weeks.
Sky LeBron on the line for us. More at WJCT.org. Thanks, Sky.
Thank you, Melissa.
Later, it's our book club. Some de-stressing recommendations for you. Plus, author Amy West on her new book. But up next.
These are some phenomenal people, very successful. We've taken a little bit of their time to share that story about what it was like.
Local leaders share their stories in the Black Leadership Town Hall. That's next. We'll be right back. Well, the leading lights of African-American business, culture, and media are all going to be on hand at a dynamic virtual event coming up at the end of this month. I learned more from Jim Stallings. He's the CEO of PS27 Ventures, and they are sponsoring the Black Leadership Town Hall for Jacksonville. Take a listen. Jim Stallings, thanks for being with us. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me a part of the program. Always great to be a part of your program.
Always good to hear your insights, and I'm excited to let everyone know about the city's first ever Black Leadership Town Hall, which your organization, PS27 Ventures, is sponsoring. You've got an amazing lineup of local celebrities and business leaders. Tell us about it. What's on the agenda?
Yeah, you know, this is going to be a conversation, and it's probably the first of its kind. I'm not sure that's ever happened at this level, but these are some phenomenal people, very successful. They've got their own story about their life. In most cases, in a corporation and a big organization, and we've taken a little bit of their time to share that story about what it was like to start out. In some cases, when there wasn't as much diversity in corporations and businesses and organizations, and what it was like to be the one and only sometimes, to be by themselves, to have mentors, to grow a career. You know, what we're finding, Melissa, is the first time many people in this, particularly this year when so much has happened, it's the first time a lot of folks have had a conversation about race, about diversity, about inclusion, what it means, why it matters. So we just thought we'd reach out to some people that have lived it. And been successful and can look back and not only talk about the journey, but also their view and hope for the future. Because I've talked to all of them in preparation for this, and I've just gotten so inspired by what they've done. So that's really what it is. It's a gift to Jacksonville to have this conversation locally with these wonderful, wonderful leaders.
And it's an amazing lineup. Let me read it out quickly. The speakers are Darnell Smith, Market President, Florida Blue, Denise Williams, Executive at FIS, Andre Wallace, President of JAX USA, Dr. Ivan Porter of Mayo Clinic, Nicole Thomas, President of Baptist South, Mark Dawkins, former Dean at UNF, News for JAX anchor Tanika Hughes, and yourself, Jim Stallings, the CEO of PS27 Ventures, a venture capital company. So when you say the panelists will discuss their personal story, we'll hear yours too. Tell us a little bit about your journey to the top of the business world and some of the challenges you faced along the way.
Well, you know, I'm going to be a moderator, so I'll sort of salt in throughout the program a little bit about myself, but it really the goal is to get them to share. I started a very poor family in North Carolina. It was a big family. There were six kids and a lot of extended. And my mom and dad never finished school. They had to work on the farm. My mom was a sharecropper, and that means, you know, a lot of people don't know what a sharecropper is. That means her grandmother was a slave, and there was a period of time when her mother was just a step away from being a slave. So their expectations of me was just get a job. I mean, you know, just find some stable. I had big dreams. I wanted to go to the Naval Academy. I wanted to be a lieutenant in the Marines. I wanted to lead a platoon. And the expectations were low, but my dreams were big. I had very few people that understood around me. Fortunately, I had some people to help me. Two things happened. One was the Supreme Court forced the integration of schools in North Carolina, which allowed me to go from the very worst black segregated high school to the very best white high school in the city of Raleigh, North Carolina. That one year back in the 1970s, that changed my life because I got a chance to get exposed to college prep courses and junior ROTC. I also met a gentleman. His name was Stephen Razakis. He's passed away. And I told him my dream. And he said, I'm going to help you. And he was the first person in my life that understood it, understood me, and I'm where I am today, honestly. Because of him, because he prepared me and taught me and showed me literally how to get into the academy, and I did, and that launched me into so many opportunities. It just would not have occurred if those two things hadn't happened. So that's a little bit about my story. It sometimes people forget that, you know, it's small things in your life, it's big people in your life that you come in contact with that make all the difference. And these other executives on this program, they've got even more incredible stories, and it will inspire people to learn, to have this conversation, to make sure that everybody gets access and opportunity, because you just don't know that person that's been denied. If they get in, they can make a change in somebody else's life and change the world in some cases. So we're really, really excited about it, and I really can't wait to open this up to Jacksonville.
It will be an insightful conversation, particularly since they'll be telling their stories, Jim, but also talking about the pandemic, high unemployment in this community coming out of that, the Black Lives Matter movement. There will be some timely topics on the agenda, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like everything's happening at once in this country. And even though every week there's one of those issues that you just rattled off, it's sort of top of mind, but they're all happening at the same time. And that's part of why we wanted these executives to speak, because they're in many cases are in business, they're in government, they're in healthcare. They're faced with this every single day. So we not only want to have them talk about their journey as a African American or woman, we also want them to talk about what is it like on the front lines, dealing with issues, you know, their employees, their suppliers, their vendors, their contractors. All of this is affecting every single one of them. So we're drawing on their life experience, but also drawing out of them their leadership and their advice. We've invited literally hundreds. I mean, there are people that are signing up every day just to listen to this on Zoom. And a lot of them we're finding are middle managers. They're first-line managers. You know, we've got students from the universities around the area. They want to know the context of why what's happening is happening, what's happening, and what should we be doing about it. So one example, Nicole Thomas, she's just to point out one of them. She's dealing with COVID-19 in her facility. She was walking me through this crack team of specialists that are dealing with some of the most distressed cases of COVID-19 right here in Jacksonville, in her facility. Mm. I mean, she's down on the floor working with this. Now, we all know just from the data that it has a severe impact, a disproportionate impact on African-Americans and people of color. And she's a person of color, and she's providing health care to everybody and seeing this firsthand. So we're asking her, what is that like? You know, are you afraid? How's your staff reacting to it? How do you keep them motivated every day? So I want her to tell that story. Denise Williams, a lot of people don't know Denise. She's grew up in Long Island, New York. She's the chief HR officer right here in Jacksonville for one of the largest companies in the world, FIS. And when she talks about diversity and inclusion, she's talking about a global discussion. I mean, they have lots of people in India, in Africa, in Europe. I mean, literally around the world, Latin America. They're in all those markets. So we tend to think locally, well, this is about black and white. Well, really, it's not. It's much broader than that. So you have to be culturally aware, culturally literate, and just a good listener in many cases to what people have to say and what they have to offer, and making sure they can bring that to the game. Because that's what businesses need. They need good ideas, smart people, but they need them in the game. And that's really what she wants to talk about. And she's got some experiences that she'll share, you know, being in the Middle East as a black woman. I mean, it's what a dichotomy, right?
Yeah.
Being in China, being in India as a senior black man. She was one of the first black women to be named as a partner on Wall Street. The first, and she was at Sanford and Bernstein. She was the first black partner, the first woman partner in that firm. And so she's got some unique, incredible stories that she just want to share. What we're finding, Melissa, is that people just need to have context. They just need to be comfortable. And sometimes you have to have people that have been there to give you the language, give you the comfort, give you the knowledge, and give you a framework for being able to go back to your organization and just talk about these topics in a way that's not hurtful, in a way that's not divisive, but in a way that really uplifts people and motivate people to want to do the right thing. So that's really why we're doing this.
Well, I would encourage everyone to register for the Black Leadership Town Hall, sponsored by PS27 Ventures and the Jacksonville Business Journal. It's on Zoom and it's free, people. Register at Eventbrite. It's coming up Friday, October 30th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. A live and interactive session where you can chat with Jim, the moderator, and also this bang-up all-star lineup of speakers of Jacksonville's top black leaders as they talk about their personal journey and their thoughts on today's most pressing matters, the pandemic, the economy, Black Lives Matter, and more. So Jim Stallings, kudos to you. He is the CEO of Jacksonville's PS27 Ventures. And again, register on Eventbrite for the Black Leadership Town Hall coming up on the 30th. Jim, thanks so much for being with us, and I'm sure it'll be a huge success.
Yes, thank you for having me, and we're really looking forward to it.
Well, are you stressed out these days? Guess what? Reading will lower your blood pressure and make you smarter. Right now, we've got some titles to recommend that celebrate our country and bring us together. It's our book club. Fearless leader Stacey Goldring is on the line with some titles for you right now. Hi, Stacey.
Hi, Melissa. How are you?
I'm great. So what's October's recommendation?
October's recommendation is A Walk in the Woods by Bill Bryson, because when all else fails, turn to Mother Nature. And I think we all need a little Mother Nature in our lives. So it's a lovely story about a walk with two novices along the Appalachian Trail, and what they learn and their foibles and fables of trying to walk the AT. And we'll actually be discussing it this morning and tomorrow if on my online chapter and notes book club. If any of the listeners want to join in, you never have to read the book to be a part of the discussion. So that's our October title. And our November title, Melissa, if anyone wants to read ahead, is City Boy by Herman Wouk, kind of a Mark Twain, Lower East Side of New York City during the 1940s, hysterical look at growing up in America that'll just make you laugh. The Adventures of Herbie Bookbinder in City Boy. And not only that, in an effort to find joy in the written word during these times, Melissa, I'm excited to announce that I'll be having an art exhibition titled Inspired by the Written Word. So we're looking for artists all over the area who would like to express their favorite book, author, quote, whatever, inspired by writing. I'd love to see their painting, sculptures, whatever their artistic expression is. All the details are at Chapter End Notes on Facebook. And we'll be hosting that art exhibition online and at San Marco Books and More. I figure what a better place than at a bookstore. So just trying all sorts of different ways to find joy in our American literary experience.
I love it. So again, it's Chapter End, E-N-D, Notes. Go to Chapter End Notes, either on Facebook or at the website online, because as you said, Stacy, you're leading a book club discussion today for your October selection.
Right, 11 a.m. EST. Just go ahead and sign up online. Love to have you. And we have a special guest on tomorrow night where we'll be having a hiker who has hiked the AT. She's presently on the Continental Divide Trail. So she'll be calling in from, I believe, New Mexico, if I have that right. And she'll be talking to us about her own personal experiences on the AT. You know, hikers are very interesting people, Melissa, and there are through hikers. I learned reading A Walk in the Woods. These are people who start, you know, closer to Springer Mountain in Georgia and make their way up to Maine. And then there are the day trippers and people who try it in all their latest REI gear and last for about an hour and a half, and others who get lost and walk it for months and months and months. But you know, if you're familiar with Ralph Waldo Emerson or Thoreau, you know, as Americans, we have such a deep identification with our national backyards, which are our state and national forests and parks. This is part of who we are. We have Teddy Roosevelt to thank for that. Mm-hmm. A Walk in the Woods is just a way to kind of take a deep breath and just fall into reading and really enjoy who we are, because we find out about the history of the AT and how we've matured as a nation in our stewardship and our love for nature and the environment. And
I can't think of a better choice right now. So again, go
therapeutic, yeah.
Join Stacy on Facebook at Chapter End Notes today for her online book club and help her with her art exhibit. If you have something to submit, get in touch. You can email her too at bookclub@wjct.org. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
In a moment, more book talk as we speak with local author Amy West. We'll be right back.
Join WJCT, Jacksonville University, and the Jacksonville Environmental Protection Board for ADAPT, the State of the St. Johns River. Experts will share their reactions and suggest next moves based on the annual river report. Join us the evening of Thursday, October 22nd. Reserve your free spot for this virtual conversation at adaptflorida.org.
As the climate changes, farmers have been feeling it first. back in the 60s and 70s, we planted our crops anywhere from the 1st of May to the end of June. Today, we're planting a lot of our crops in, you know, mid-April to beat that heat in the summertime.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. The future of farming in a changing climate. That is next time on Marketplace.
Tonight at 6 on WJCT News 89.9.
As the climate changes, farmers have been feeling it first.
Back in the 60s and 70s, we planted our crops anywhere from the 1st of May to the end of June. Today, we're planting a lot of our crops in, you know, mid-April to beat that heat in the summertime.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. The future of farming in a changing climate. That is next time on Marketplace.
Tonight at 6 on WJCT News 89.9.
As the largest non-white voting demographic this year, the push is on to get out the Latino vote. But a new book is taking on the myth of a monolithic community by elevating often unheard voices inside one of our most diverse populations. Author Paola Ramos on nuanced identity and how that's transforming what it means to be American. Next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, travel expert and local author Amy West knows this community, and she's revealing her most iconic and unique destinations. It's all in her new book, 100 Things to Do in Jacksonville Before You Die. Amy West, good morning. Good to have you back on the show. Oh, actually, we don't have Amy on the show because I hear that horrible sound of a disconnection. As we try to get her back, we're going to talk a little bit about this book. The reason Amy wrote it is because she loves this community. She travels all over the world, of course, until the pandemic anyway. But she's an ambassador from Jacksonville and wants to tell its story because she believes it's often been misunderstood. Now, as we work to get her back on the line, what she's done is put together a list of 100 things to do or see in this area. Things that even if you've lived here your whole life, you may not know about. So what she did was she went all the way from the beaches out to the trails of the Timaquan Preserve and up north to the Nassau County line, all the way down to St. Augustine. It's a pretty big area, and she shared her insider knowledge on shopping, festivals, eats, historic theaters, even state-of-the-art robots, where you can get the smallest donuts in town, where you can see the biggest jumbotron in the world at the Jacksonville Jaguars game day experience. You even learn about the Jacksonville Ale Trail. Yes, there is such a thing. You can drink your way along the Jacksonville Ale Trail and discover the First Coast's growing craft brew scene. So these are some of the things that Amy has put into her book. Do we have Amy or no? Still trying to get her. Okay, again, the book is called 100 Things to Do in Jacksonville Before You Die by author Amy West. It is available wherever books are sold out this week. Pick it up. It's a great gift, too, for the person in your life who loves the First Coast. A great coffee table book for the holidays, 100 Things to Do in Jacksonville Before You Die, your cheat sheet to Jacksonville's most iconic and sometimes secret destinations. We've got a couple of minutes left before we wrap this up. David Luckin, our station manager, is hopping onto the mic to talk about what's going on around the building and on the music side of our operation. Good morning.
Oh, there's always so much going on. And we'll start with Turntable Tuesday on Anthology on the WJCT app tonight. We've got Moonflower, a double gorgeous Santana album that came out in 1977. We've got that, and of course we've got, I want to remind people that we've got a great jazz brunch every Sunday on our app, also on HD4 Electro Lounge Radio, where we play from contemporary to classic jazz. It's really a nice place to be Sunday mornings, 2 hours of jazz.
That's right, and we can't say enough good things about the JME, the Jacksonville Music Experience. If you're just hearing about this, what it is a brand new series, a whole set of new radio stations. You can experience them in your car on our HD channels. You can look at them and listen to them online, or you can listen through the WJCT app three different radio stations. Let's talk about them.
Classical music on HD2, beautiful music, also streaming. Anthology, the best music of the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And we curated and handpicked it. You're not going to hear any junk, all the good stuff. And then, of course, Electro Lounge Radio is what happened to Electro Lounge, the program. Now it's a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week music service. And just a nice place to be when the world is so crazy. It's nice just to turn on a little chill out, a little reggae, a little sunshine music to get us through these extraordinary times. And we do have the other element of JME, of course, is a soundstage, which is kind of put on hold until we can repopulate the building with all the folks and folks who would come in and do the concerts. We do have something scheduled for February, so we are hopeful that we will bring live music back to the station soon. But until then, as Melissa said, three great music stations to give you a break from all this news. And we love what Melissa does, but even Melissa gets tired of the news sometimes. And we like to just escape into the music, so we offer that service. But don't forget tonight's anthology, Turntable Tuesday, Santana.
Oh, how cool is that? So if you, let's say you're a business owner, maybe you play Spotify or Pandora or whatever, you know, to set the mood in your home or business, this is an easy thing you can do. You can just play JME through the app, through our website,
Jax.
Or through
jaxmusic.org.
Yeah, go to wjct.org/jaxmusic or download the app, play whichever station fits your taste through the app, or if you're in your car, just tune to our HD channels and you have three different radio stations playing music that you will not hear anywhere else on terrestrial radio or on other streams. This is unique.
And we had about a two-week break from our Spotify Electro Lounge Radio playlist. We had a technical problem, but we are back now. I put up a great hour-and-a-half playlist Sunday night at midnight, so you've got fresh music all week, and come next Sunday at midnight, another fresh playlist. So we've got you covered when it comes to music. Melissa, of course, has got you covered when it comes to news and information. So we hope you're giving you all that you need to get by nowadays.
So check it out, the Jacksonville Music Experience, through the app, on the radio, or go to wjct.org/jaxmusic.
I think there's a shortcut. I think you can just do jaxmusic.org.
Let me check that.
And that's real quick and easy.
Let me check that. I am checking that as we speak. Oh, you're absolutely right. Jaxmusic.org. Go to jaxmusic.org and enjoy the Jacksonville Music Experience, created by David Luckin and team here in the building. Always good to see you. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Enjoy the music, everyone. And thanks for listening. That is our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is show director. Our news director is Jessica Palumbo. Bill Bortsfield runs digital. Keep those emails coming to First Coast Connect at wjct.org. You can catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8, or our podcast will be up later today, wherever you listen. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.